Welcome to the Craig and Greg Show, presented by Maximize Leadership. Now, here are Craig Owens and Greg Harris.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Craig and Greg Show. I'm Craig. This is Greg. We started a beginning of a series a couple episodes ago where we want to talk to you about, based on where you are in the organization, if you're not the point leader, you might have to lead in several different directions. And so we talked about leading up, especially if you had a difficult boss. And I think some people will experience that, but I think something that people will probably experience far more frequently is trying to lead across in the organization with a difficult peer. Mm-hmm. You don't have the authority of a boss to say, get your act together or you're out of here, or you're going to get some demerits, or we're going to dock your pay or something. You don't have that kind of authority. Mm-hmm. You're on the same level and they're just kind of a pain to work with. But I don't know. You've never experienced that, have you?
You know, this is a chance for all you viewers and listeners. Raise your hand now. We can see you, that you've actually had a difficult peer or a difficult boss. And a difficult.
I got both hands up.
Exactly. Not that you were one, that you had one.
Yeah.
Good. I think the difficult peer, our goal should be to figure out why they're difficult. Mm. In the meantime, though, you really can't put the stick to them and say, right, if you don't do this, you're off the team. You
know? Right.
And I think that's frustrating for many people. So what is there an example that you would say, this worked well with a difficult peer, and then maybe we unpack like what didn't work well, and that's the trilogy of mistakes.
Yes.
That we could write one book on, yeah, it went well. And there's the encyclopedia, you know, on what didn't.
Well, you know, like you just said, I mean, that's, I wish that I could say I got this all right the first time, because most of the time you just get frustrated. And here's what I found. I end up talking about that person instead of talking to that person.
Ooh.
And that solves absolutely nothing. I mean, and I get it. I mean, you need somebody that you can vent with a little bit, but when I'm just going home and I'm just talking to my wife about this person, or if I'm calling you up and talking to you about them, that's really not accomplishing anything. And so, so I would say, first of all, that's got to be step number one, is those kind of conversations, make sure that they're not just conversations of going, this person is a jerk, this person, but say, help me understand how I can connect with that person. That's an okay conversation to have somewhere else. But then ultimately, you need to have the conversation with that person.
This isn't the subject of this episode, but I think it's really easy to be passive aggressive with a difficult person.
Yes.
We'll do that another time, probably.
My goodness.
I'm sure someone like, no, do a passive aggressive. I got a passive aggressive person too. But I think the message you just shared, Craig, is really life-giving as a leader.
Yes.
Or an emerging leader, you know, a middle leader. I didn't say manager or supervisor. Like, we're all leaders in some capacity. Right. Sometimes it goes well and sometimes not. But I do think getting some advice might be good.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to act on it. The goal isn't to be secretively bashing their reputation across the, you know, the company.
Right.
And like, well, maybe I'll talk to them, maybe I won't. But I got, right now I got 11 people who aren't happy with them. That's right. Not the goal.
No.
As a coach or a leader.
No.
Right?
So there's a story that Jesus tells where he says to his guys, and I think that they all got it. He says, no, when the master comes home, and does he say to the servant, hey, why don't you sit down and just take it easy and have some dinner with me? No, he says, what you do, the servant would serve the master first and then maybe take care of their things. And he says, and then would the servant expect the master to say to them, hey, good job for doing your job? So you won't expect that. If we are a servant leader, if we're going to be a servant leader, like we have to expect that this difficult person we're going to work with is not going to say, oh, I see what you're trying to do. Thanks for doing that for me. So don't expect any accolades. Don't expect any attaboys for doing it like that. But to serve the other person, I think, really requires me getting out of my own frame of reference and getting around over here and trying to see the job, see everything else through this other person's eyes and feel it through their heart. Why are they behaving the way that they do? What's going on? And that's how I'm going to serve them best, is by really trying to empathize see the world, see the business setting the way that they see it. That's how I'm going to serve them.
And to me, that seems like a big assignment. Like
it is. But,
and then how do you know how they see the world unless you got to go back to them and talk,
right?
Which is the goal.
Yeah. Right?
This is what, you know, this is what leaders do, coaches do. I think the one part I have probably struggled with it because I don't know if the person's coachable.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So you're going to go to a peer. They're difficult. They just blew up a meeting or hurt someone's feelings. And you're like, what's the best way to approach this? And often I have felt I walked on eggshells.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think you do feel like that because you're unsure of where you're coming from. But this is the reason why I'm a big fan of, like, we've talked about taking different assessments before. Mm. I like to take the assessment with this idea of I'm going to learn something about myself, but mainly what I want to learn about myself is what is the way that I just by default respond. How do I see things, hear things, process things? And it's my native language of speaking. But I want to understand that because then I can say, okay, well, this difficult person is different from me. So although I wouldn't have responded that way, there is a reason why they're responding this way. And so maybe if I've taken one of those assessments, now I could sit there and say, I took a temperaments profile and I'm choleric, but they're melancholic. So, okay, now I see why we would respond to that different. Or I'm a D on the DISC assessment, and so this is why I'm going to see it this way. They're an I. Oh, okay. So, you know, whatever the assessment is, and again, that is serving the other person, because then as you get to know that, I think there is the eggshell thing. But if you start by saying, when you come to the person, if you say something like, boy, you probably felt like this in the meeting, or didn't that thing make you, and then gauge their response. If they're kind of like, yes, you get me. Oh, okay. Now maybe I don't have to tiptoe around so much. I'm starting to get on common ground with them. But if they're like, no, that's not it at all. Okay. Back to the drawing board.
They're being difficult.
Right. I gotta try again. I didn't get it right. That was my best estimate, but let me try again on how to do that.
Difficult person, peer. We have a lot of definitions, I'm sure, in our heads, you as well, listeners and viewers, but finding their communication style, language, and then finding how they wish to be addressed as a leader is critical for our success if we're going to that difficult peer. Absolutely. Do you have any suggestions or advice?
Yeah. And again, I think it's the same thing that we talked about with dealing with a difficult boss, is if you come to the person truly with that servant's attitude of, I really want to be your friend. I really want to help you. I want to help you so that I get better. I want to help you so that I have a better work environment, but I really want to help you. It's really hard to treat somebody poorly when it's a genuine, I'm here to help you with something. It's hard to like start dumping on that person, unless I guess you're a sociopath or something and you enjoy inflicting pain on somebody. But when you come with that attitude, I think that you get past some of the prickliness. And a lot of times that it's a defense.
It is.
Because I think you're going to hurt me. I think you're coming with an agenda. I think you're going to use me for your own gain. And so there's that defensiveness up there. I'm not going to let you get past that. But when you're not coming with those things, and when they see you approaching your other teammates the same way as they're approaching you, they're not just doing this to single me out. Right. This is just who they really are. Then I think that begins to let the barrier down a little bit, and you get some more glimpses.
I'm going to tie two things together, and maybe this will open up the can of worms. But so the defensivism is a big deal. It might contribute to the definition of it's a difficult peer.
Sure.
Where is mistrust in this?
Yeah. You know, I think trust is earned over time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we talked about giving people mulligans, giving people a second chance. I think that's, you have to give people a second chance until they have proven to you they're throwing away all of the chances. I'm not listening to any coaching. I'm not listening to anything that you have to say. I'm just going to do it this way. And there might be a time that you have to get to a spot, hopefully not, but maybe at the end of the road, you might have to say, you know what, we're just going to have to figure out a way to peacefully coexist. We're going to have to just agree to disagree. They don't want to receive anything from anybody. And so it's not that you don't trust the person. It's maybe you don't trust that the process is going to go anywhere. Right. And so I'm spending a lot of effort and they don't want to receive anything that I'm giving them. So I don't think that you build a wall. I think you leave the door open that they could come back to you at some point. Mm-hmm. But I think then you have to start saying, you know, okay, if I'm spending all of my effort on this one person, I can't even do my own job. I can't interact with my other peers because I'm just so obsessed with one person.
Right.
I don't mistrust them, but I got to be careful of how much money, time, effort I am spending on them.
And when do you know? I mean, is there like a a video game? You know, you got five lives, and so this game, you know, is not, you're starting over.
Yeah.
I worked alongside somebody who definitely lost or never had the sensitivity chip. And to coach the person was a reaction from them.
Yes.
At what point, Craig, have you ever had an example of it's just not worth it?
Yeah.
You know, and particularly as we did this, peer, right? You're not, the buck doesn't stop with you.
Right.
You know, you don't get to say, you know, I'm going to either reassign you or you're going to leave, you know.
Right.
How do we deal with that?
You know, I did not too long ago, well, maybe the last 4 or 5 years, I was really working with somebody and I finally got to a spot where they actually verbalized. They said, this is what I'm going to do, even if it means that I'm driving off a cliff later on, you know, that I'm heading towards that. I just want to do what I want to do right now. And I had to say to them, okay, well, I still love you. I still care for you, but I have to step back because I don't want my actions to be the one that's pushing you that way. Because if we're making an interaction with somebody and it's pushing them farther and farther away into that hardness or what, yeah. I don't want to, you know, keep nailing on this so hard that I put them in a spot where they can never recover from it. So I think at some point you have to go, but they are just outright rejecting everything. All right. I'll leave the door open. If you want to come back, if you want to talk to me again, I'm not going to treat you poorly, but I have to stop trying to invest in you. I have to stop trying to, because now I'm just throwing my money down this hole and it's, you know, it's not going anywhere.
Maybe this is where you can address the value of diplomacy.
Mm.
When you have a difficult peer, it does feel good to run them through the ringer with other people.
Right.
Because you think, oh, just, you know, if you won't listen to me, I'll have 10 people against you.
Right.
Yeah. Now we've created an anti-team culture.
Yep.
So where does diplomacy, how to develop that? Does that mean kind of hiding our frustration? Eventually we're like, he's just not coachable. He doesn't want to listen, or you know, she's so defiant, you know, because we may not be able to unpack it.
Yeah.
Where does diplomacy come in?
Well, like Stephen Covey in his 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, he talks about, you know, we want to strive for win-win.
Yeah.
But he says that then, surprisingly, if you can't get to win-win, your next best option is what he calls no deal. Hmm. Where you say, okay, if I can't find a way for both of us to, then we just have to stop. It doesn't mean that I've written you off. It doesn't mean that I think that you're hopeless. It doesn't mean that I never want to see you again. But there are other people that I could be investing in that want to receive that and are going to grow from that. And my hope is if I say no deal to you right now, that maybe somewhere down the road, you're going to look and go, well, look at those other people that he's investing in. They're all growing. They're growing closer together. They're, you know, and I'm not. And then again, maybe you've got a boss that as well is going to see that. And, you know, and again, that diplomacy might have to fall on somebody who does have the authority, you know, that you go to them and say, this is what I've done.
Tried everything.
And I'm stumped. I really don't know what else to do.
I think for some people, it might correlate to examples they've had either growing up or, you know, maybe in their own home or, you know, personal life. It's like, well, it's just not worth it. You know, they won't change. Hmm. And we're, when we have this defeatedness in right. us as leaders, we've kind of lost, we're not coaching people anymore. We're right. not developing people, even if it's a peer.
Right.
Because there's, you get in a huddle with, you know, 11 people in a football game and one goes, I want to run this play. There's the sideline.
Right.
We're running this play per the coach or, you know, right. whatever. Where does defeatism, you know, how do we deal with that? Because it can get discouraging and it's so difficult in a culture mm-hmm. where you have a difficult person and we don't deal with it. And they're like, well, just be difficult. They don't yeah. get rid of them.
Right.
Where does defeatism play?
Well, I think part of it is that attitude thing of saying, you know, is this person saying I can't change or are they saying I won't change? Yeah. You know, if they say I won't change, I think that's kind of your cue to get to the no deal part because that attitude has already locked them in there. Saying I can't change is something different. Yeah. Maybe they don't know what it's supposed to look like on the other side or nobody's ever believed in them before or whatever it is. But I don't think we ever want to get to the spot where we just write people off and turn your back on them. Mm. You do have to still say, okay, I'm still here. Here I am. You know, I can't give you anything else because I've already given you everything that I can give, right. but I'm still standing right here. Almost like that, the prodigal father, you know, he gave his son everything. He couldn't chase him down to that country where he went and say, hey, stop spending your money like that because you're going to blow through it. The son wasn't going to listen to all that, right. but the father could still stand there like this. And as soon as the son came back, he says, okay, good. Now I can accept you.
That's a good one. Let's tie in. So you wrote an awesome book on shepherd leadership and that shepherd's heart is something that you almost have to, you know, eat a little crow, bite your tongue,
yes.
getting to diplomacy, but the yeah. servant's heart, where does that come in and how can we work on that ourselves? Because it's really, if we're going to work with someone, we have to work on ourselves first or we're coming
right.
with broken pieces or maybe not the best attitude. So kind of from your book's perspective, how servant leadership plays into peers.
I think the anti-servant's attitude is saying, I feel sorry for myself. Things aren't going my way. The servant's attitude is, I feel sorry that this other person is in the situation that they're in. I'm sorry that they're running off by themselves. I'm sorry that they're isolating, or I'm sorry that they feel trapped. It's feeling again. I want to feel what they feel. I want to have that empathy with them. Yeah. You know what? If I was there, I might feel that same thing, but how can I help you get out of that? When it's like, oh man, I feel bad for myself that I have to work alongside them. I feel bad for me that I have to go into this meeting with them. That's not serving them. That's just saying somebody have a pity party. And that's when you're going to start going to talk to other people about, yeah, they're a real jerk, aren't they? And you want to pile on. You want to find justification for feeling like that. But the servant's attitude is saying, I feel bad for you. Mm. And I'd love to be able to help you. If you'll let me, I'd love to be able to step in there.
I wonder if that's the easiest approach. If you've come to the conclusion, this is for viewers now and listeners, if you come to the conclusion, they're probably going to be defiant. They're going to be defensive. And diplomacy maybe could come into play if you said, you know, I know you've chosen a position, you've taken this position or you've taken this perspective or you've accepted this insight. When you're ready, I would love to visit. No strings attached. We're peers. Maybe that's the diplomacy to say when you're ready.
Yes, I think so. Yep.
You know, maybe give the viewers or listeners a challenge of how to do that.
I think, and then it has to be lived out. You can say those words, you know, I'm here when you're ready, but then you have to live it out. So it can't be, you know, when you walk into the office that you just look at them and just kind of give them this thing, but you're like, good morning. You know, glad to see you today. How was your weekend? What do you got planned? You know, you're still trying to, hey, it's Sally's birthday. Are you coming to the conference room? We're going to have the birthday. Still trying to include them.
Yeah.
Even if you know that they're going to say, no, I don't want to go to the birthday party. I got to work on all of these stupid reports on, I'm sorry. Can I help you? Is there some way that I can help you so that you can get to this party? That's what the servant's attitude is still just keep on giving that.
And wrapping up, you've got a quote from Maya Angelou regarding change and complaining. You want to share that?
Yeah.
Because it's a good one.
Unfortunately,
when I read it, when you gave me your notes before this episode, I'm like, oh, crap. I got to work on it
don't
myself.
Don't you hate when that pokes you?
Well, you did it on purpose, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I'm not going to give you a mulligan. Don't do that crap again. No.
Maya Angelou said, if you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your attitude. Don't complain. I think it's
that short sentence at the end. Really
those last ones, really.
I was going to be a difficult peer with you right there.
No. Well, listen, and again, this is maybe where a coach can help you. I think that, sometimes it's nice to have maybe a spouse at home or a friend that you can go and talk to, but, they're going to naturally side with you. If they're not at the office with you, seeing this difficult peer, they're going to kind of naturally side with you. They might not be the one that goes, hey, time out. You kind of crossed the line here. You're feeling sorry for yourself and you're not, wanting to help them. And this is where a coach could come in, an independent, a third party that could be able to give you some better perspective. So go to maximizeleadership.com, check out our page on coaching, fill out the form on the bottom. You could even write in there, I got a really difficult coworker and I'm struggling with this. Whatever it is, we'll read through that and we'll be honest when we get back in touch with you. We'll say, this is how we can help you with our coaching, or we'll say maybe this is another avenue that you should pursue. We also love when you leave us comments on Twitter, Maximize Podcast, or right here on this video if you want to leave a comment below. Why don't you give us some feedback on this episode? Maybe give us some thoughts on a topic that you'd like us to discuss in the future. We'll love to be able to look into that as well. And then as well, make sure that on YouTube that you not only subscribe, but click the bell so you're notified. We give you some bite-sized little nuggets. Greg has a regular series called The Max Minute, and literally it's a minute at most, sometimes less, just a thought for you to grab a hold of. We want to be able to make those available to you as well. We're here to help fuel your leadership growth. So stay in touch with us. Let us know what we can do for you. Stay tuned. We got more coming up for you.
So
get in touch with Craig and Greg through Twitter at Maximize Podcast or at MaximizeLeadership.com. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any episodes of the Craig and Greg Show.